So, let's see, it's April 16th, 2016, and beautiful day in Jerusalem. We're going to be looking at Genesis 28, starting in verse 10, going into chapter 29, verse 30. Everybody knows it's on the website. And then the Haftarah, according to our readings, is Hosea 12, verse 13.
It's actually 12 in English. It's 12, 12.
Right, okay, sorry. But, and there's an F after that. So that means it's kind of afterwards, following. So in the English it's 12, 12. Hosea is one of those funky chapters where the Hebrew and English don't always line up. So this morning I want to start in a different way. I want to read the Haftarah. And there's not much to read there. I mean, you can read as much as you want, but for our purposes, I think we will we'll read the first two verses. So everyone, we're in Hosea 12. And I'm going to read these two verses here. Jacob fled to the country of Aram. Ste Aram is what it says in Hebrew, so the field of Aram. And he worked to acquire a wife. I'm reading the NET Bible. He tended sheep to pay for her. What other translations do you have there for verse 12 in English?
Israel served to get a wife, and to pay for her he tended sheep.
Okay.
Yeah. To earn a wife, tended flocks for a wife.
Okay. Jordas, how would you translate that?
Oh. Uve'isha shamal.
You like that English? Those English translations?
I'm not sure what to do with that.
Yeah. In the Hebrew, it says Israel served or slaved or worked for a wife, and for the wife he guarded, mm-hmm. protected.
What's this shomer? It is shomer. Yeah. To serve.
No. Serve is Oved.
But
it's the word you often use if you're trying to protect something. It can be used for sheep. But it's interesting. There's nothing here about paying. So you're kind of trying to read into context of... Because we all know the story about Jacob and Leah and Rachel and Laban. He got wives by working for his father-in-law. So... All right, and then the next verse. The Lord brought Israel out of Egypt by a prophet, and due to a prophet, Israel was preserved alive.
Huh.
Okay, that's the NET Bible. What other translations do we have for that verse?
The Lord used a prophet to bring Israel up from Egypt. By a prophet, he cared for him.
Okay. Anything else out there?
Then the Lord led Jacob's descendants, the Israelites, out of Egypt by a prophet who guided and protected them.
Okay, so the Hebrew here.
No, what is the Hebrew?
It's by a prophet. Sorry? Yeah, Nishma, right, that's right. By a prophet, the Lord brought up Israel from Egypt, and by a prophet, Nishma. Mm. Okay, so that's the same word, it's just the Nifal of the Shomer that we had before. So in the first sentence, the context is maybe he's a sheep and he's guarding, he's protecting sheep. And then in the second verse, which we're assuming is who? Moses, right? The prophet Moses, as Deuteronomy calls him. That he's also guarding and protecting. And we also know that Moses was also a shepherd, right? He also worked for his father-in-law. right? He got a wife, not because of guarding, but it was... Anyways, we're going to look at those two stories in a bit, compare them. Same word, guarding and protecting. So this is how we're going to start this morning, and it's a bit of a... Not a conundrum or a puzzle, but more of an enigma, this little beginning connection here of how this ancient Haftarah that you know about this, right? What we've been following, where it came from and where we're going with this. Who knows? This is all a big treasure hunt because I also don't know. And so we've all going to contribute to this. So let's go to Genesis 28 now and see where it leads us. Verse 10. Vivica, are you able to read?
Yeah.
Starting there in verse 10. And why don't you read to the end of the chapter?
Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran. He reached a certain place and spent the night there because the sun had set. He took one of the stones from the place, put it there at his head, and lay down in that place. And he dreamed. A stairway was set on the ground with its top reaching heaven, and God's angels were going up and down on it. Yahweh was standing there beside him, saying, I am Yahweh, God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your offspring the land that you are now sleeping on. Your offspring will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out towards the west and the east, the north and the south. All the peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. Look, I'm with you, and will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. He was afraid and said, what an awesome place this is. This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that was near his head and set it up as a marker. He poured oil on the top of it and named the place Bethel, though previously the city was named Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, if God will be with me and watch over me on this journey, if he provides me with food to eat and clothing to wear, and if I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. This stone that I set up as a marker will be God's house, and I will give to you a tenth of all that you give me.
Okay. Jim, would you like to finish maybe the next 15 verses?
Yeah. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the open country, with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. The stone over the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob asked the shepherds, my brothers, where are you from? We're from Haran, they replied. He said to them, do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson? Yes, we know him, they answered. Then Jacob asked them, is he well? Yes, he is, they said, and here comes his daughter, Rachel, with the sheep. Look, he said, the sun is still high. It's not time for the flocks to be gathered. Water the sheep and take them back to pasture. We can't, they replied, until all the flocks are gathered and the stone's been rolled away from the mouth of the well. Then we will water the sheep. Hey, I've just thought of that. While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. When Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Yaakov, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. And there Jacob told him all these things. Then Laban said to him, "You're my own flesh and blood." We go on, don't we?
Read. Yeah. Or
somebody else wants to do that.
John, would you like to read?
Laban said to him, "Just because you are my relative, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Laban had two daughters. The older was named Leah, and the younger was named Rachel. Leah had ordinary eyes, but Rachel was shaped and beautiful. Jacob loved Rachel, so he answered Laban, "I will work for you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban replied, "Better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay with me." So Jacob worked 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love. And then Jacob said to Rachel, "Give me my wife, for my time is completed. I want to sleep with her." So Laban invited all the men of the place to a feast. That evening, Laban took his daughter Leah and gave it to Jacob, and he sat with her. Laban gave his slave Zilpah to his daughter Leah as her slave. And when morning came, there was Leah. So he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it for Rachel that I worked for you? Why have you deceived me?" Laban answered, "It is not the custom in this place to give the younger daughter in marriage before the firstborn. Complete this week when the celebration, and we will also give you this younger one in return for working yet another 7 years for me." And Jacob did just that. He finished the week of celebration, and Laban gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. And Laban gave his slave Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her slave. Jacob slept with Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb.
I think that's beyond the fellowship.
Verse 30.
It's interesting, when I read it this morning, it was the first time I always thought that Laban was such a so-and-so, and that he didn't get Rachel until he'd worked another 7 years. But in fact, all he has to do is finish the bridal week, keep Leah happy, and then he gets married a week later. Pretty good, isn't it? Then he has to work 7 years, but that's
all. Yeah, and he's gone 20 years.
What?
And he's gone a total of like 20 right. years, so.
Well, he's done his fair share of conning people, so.
That's right.
Oh, and they deserve each other, yeah.
That's right. They're all related anyways. Mm. They're all related. Mm. Cousins.
He still works 14 years
until
his
death.
Yes.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Two weddings in the space of a week. It's pretty good.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of this. Where's Jacob leaving from?
Leaving from?
Beersheba.
Beersheba.
So,
just to remind ourselves, in the last couple of weeks, he's tricked his brother through his mother's input and got the blessing, and now his brother's threatened to kill him, and he's run away. Both his parents sent him away to Aram. And everybody knows where Aram is, or what it is today? Aram. Syria, like today. Everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I have Haran, but which actually Haran, Aran is the same.
Well, Aram is Syria, but
Aram.
Right, Aram. Right, but Haran is an area there in the northern part of Syria. So you hear Padan Aram, that combination, and the Golan. But no, it's further. It's further. Yeah. past Damascus.
Haran, Golan.
Yeah. So, just thematically, for motif's sake, what are some things that appear a lot in these passages, themes or objects or?
Including
wells,
right? Be'er.
So he goes from Beersheba with seven wells, and he gets all the way up north, and he discovers a well with this.
Beersheba is the well of the swearing, not the seven wells.
It's both.
Well, it depends which part of. Right, but it depends which part of Genesis they kind of give different. If anyone wants to look that up.
Swear the covenant was not
they name it Beersheba when with the oath, but there have been these seven wells beforehand.
Right. Hold on. Let me get to the. Okay, so as Inga pointed out in Genesis 21:31, it's where they swear an oath.
Thank you, Inga.
Right? That's to Nishba, the swear an oath. Also, Genesis 26:33. But then it says they have seven lambs to seal that oath. And so, yeah, okay, so maybe I don't have a verse here that says it's connected to seven, but there's obviously a good reason how Sheva got put into that as well with the number seven. So, anyway, but the point is there's wells. There's wells throughout the story with Jacob. He's leaving a well, he's going to other wells. What else seems to follow Jacob in this story?
His trickery, cunning.
Okay, well, trickery, cunning, yeah. But as far as objects or things?
Being a sheep, shepherd.
And I'll just come out and say it. Stones. Rocks. Starts off, and in verse 11, he comes to this place, and he spends the night there, and the sun goes down, and he takes one of the stones from the place, and he puts it by his head, he goes to sleep.
Does he put it by his head or under his head?
Right, so everybody, sorry?
Maybe it was for protection that he could use it to defend himself, maybe he didn't actually use it to sleep.
Right.
I think it's a sort of pillow, isn't it? I mean, he puts it under his head.
Well, that's the stereotype we have, that it's a pillow. There's a lot of art and things that kind of have him with his head on a rock, but what kind of idiot sleeps with a rock under his head?
It says
in 18, it was a pillow.
Which verse?
Verse 18.
It says...
No,
he put for his pillows.
Yeah, well, it just says that he took it and he put it there by his head.
That he had placed, I have it in English, he had placed it under his head, and he takes it and sets it up as a pillar.
Yeah, no, that's an interpretation.
Is it?
Yeah, in the Hebrew it says, V'yikach et ha'even ha'shesham me'roshatav.
So, he just took it.
Yeah, he just put it by his head. And how he puts it, okay, maybe he could put it under, put it... You know, near.
Here's that word Melashotav that Gary's talking about. If you look at 1 Kings 19:6, Elijah is fleeing to Mount Horeb, and he looks and he sees at his head that there's a cake, a bread there. So it doesn't mean that it's underneath his head, it just means that it's near his head.
So I'm not saying he couldn't have used it as a pillow, but it's an interpretation, is all I'm trying to say. So.
If you're already, let's say, ill prepared traveler who's left in some haste, which he probably was, you know, when you lie down to sleep, you need something to put out of your head.
Yeah,
it's only a stone, you know.
Right. How come people aren't selling pillows with rocks today, though?
Here's another one. 1 Samuel 26:16. But it's tiny. There is it Shaul? I think it's King Shaul that's sleeping, and he has a spear and a thing of water by his head.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you don't sleep on a spear; it's just something that's nearby.
It's close. So let's just assume. I know you love rock pillows, and so if you like your rock pillows, you sleep with them. I don't care. I'm not going to. But. What else could you, why else would you have a stone by your head? Florence mentions protection. You mean like a little wall for wind, or?
You can use it to throw it. Just throw it. You're throwing it in the wrong box.
We've left the caveman at days. There's knives and other things that I would think would be a better. Okay, no, it could be protection. I'm not saying it.
Goliath of Gath picks up stones and throws them at giants, so it seems to me perfectly reasonable. You have a, if you're not going to use it as a pillow, you've at least got it, you know.
Yeah, but
a
stone for slinging, you need distance. If you're asleep, you know.
We seem to live in a world with quite a lot of stones just being thrown.
No, I'm not trying to say stones can't hurt people. Anyways.
And he uses it for an altar the next day. What do you think?
Okay, so this might be one of the clues to our answer here. You heard what she said?
Yeah.
That he uses it later for part of an altar. Does it say Mizbeach? I thought it was Matzeh. It's not altar, it's a Matzeva.
Standing stone.
Yeah, here it is in verse 18. Matzeva. So, what's a Matzeva? Has anyone been to Geza?
Or Tel Dan.
Tel Dan or Tel Geza. Okay, what is that? Tel Geza, Tel Dan. These are there, but what are they? What's a standing stone? It's a stone that stands, but like, what's it there for?
It's not very big.
Well, it depends. Geza are huge.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, they're big.
It says it's the house of God. It's the
Beit El, yeah.
Well,
we'll get to Beit El, which this is part of that getting there. But a matzeva is a standing stone, and it's related to cultic practice, which all that means is a way people communicated with God in the ancient world. And so this stone that was originally placed at Jacob's head might have been put there on purpose in relation to him trying to communicate with God when he went to sleep that night. Because what happened?
I think it's like an amulet of protection.
Well, not necessarily protection, but like a telephone. Yeah. You put the receiver to your head, and so...
Almost like creating a place for the ladder to land.
Yeah.
Like making that
right. Because where does the ladder come down? What's it say in the verse?
Resting on the earth. It said he had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth. Its top reached to heaven.
Okay. And then the
angels were going up and down.
And then the next verse.
There above it stood the Lord. I will give you yours and the land in which you're lying.
Okay, so
he's lying on land and the ladder's on the land.
That's what the English says there. But in the Hebrew, it says, Vehine, Adonai nitzav alav. Mm-hmm. And so it's ambiguous.
It
seems, yeah. What?
Uh-huh.
Right. It's coming down there.
Mutza, she's saying, in verse 12.
Okay. Right.
I'm getting lost.
In 28:12, it says he had a dream, and he saw a sulam mutzav. And so, what are your translations there from Mutzav? I have erected.
Yeah, resting.
Resting. What?
Set on the ground.
Set on. Okay. And then if you go down to verse 13, it says, and the Lord, behold, the Lord was standing or stood at the top. And the question is, what is the top of what? Or on top of? And so, yeah, obviously you could say on top of the ladder or the sulam, or on top of Jacob. right? Alav.
Yeah, Jabez has standing beside him.
Yeah, exactly. Often in Jewish interpretation, I think it relates that God is there right on top of Jacob, like that stone. Like, he's right there in his face, near him. So it's a close encounter. It could be. What is happening here for Jacob? What is this first thing that's happening here in his life? What has he never experienced before? According to the Genesis, the Bible.
Direct contact with God himself. Direct contact with God himself.
Yeah, this is the very first time that Jacob has ever heard, seen, talked to, or anything with God, according to the Genesis narrative. So it's his first experience with God. His grandfather and his father, they've all had these different experiences, but this is Jacob's first time. And so it's interesting, going back to this question, what is Beit El? He's on his way to Padan Aram, or Aram, or Haran, or all these things, but he stops at this place along the way. And so it seems this isn't just some random place that he stopped just because that's where the hotel was, but he specifically went to this place to try to talk to God.
Sorry, this translation, it says he was surprised by the setting of the sun. And so it seems like it was coincidental.
Mm. Where do you have that
verse 11.
I mean, that translation, yeah, there's nothing about surprise there, but...
Stop for the night because the sun has set, I have.
Right. I think what that translation is trying to do is trying to explain why he camped there. Ki, Vahashemesh. So, again, maybe you could say it was just the sun was setting, but it doesn't mean that that's why he stopped specifically there, because the sun was setting.
So was Lut's son cultic place?
So this is like what a lot of people would think. Maybe it was like a place where...
If you're camping, if you're hiking, whatever, whether it's now or then, surely when the sun goes down, you say, hey guys, it's getting late, we've got to stop. And it just says a certain place. If it had any, I have.
It doesn't have a certain place. It says Bah Makom, and this is the same kind of literary feature that you have when Elijah comes to the cave Ha-Mehara in 1 Kings 19. It's the cave. You're supposed to know that Moses was at as well. It's Sinai. The one. Yeah.
So
there are
Jewish people, and probably that this place must be Makom.
Okay.
Because Jacob says this is God's house, and of course, Hamakol, though I'm not sure that he says Hamakol, I think Hamakol. But anyway, so there is a thought that it was Mount Moriah.
Okay, so the question about Beit El, about what is this place? First off, we have an archaeological place. Archaeological. A historical place. Where is that? What's it? Right, the Arabic village Beitin, right, which is in the West Bank, and Anson Rainey has, you know, he's done a lot of research and writing on this. One of the greatest scholars of this area. It's a great article.
But it mentions the previous name, which is Luz.
Right. Yeah.
So it is in the north of Jerusalem.
Okay. Right, well, Beitin is also in the north of Jerusalem. Right, right. So there is that place that is connected to Beit El and, assumably, Jacob.
So some people think it was further away from the north, and some people think it was specifically Jerusalem.
I think he's responding to her comment that some people think it was in Jerusalem, and he's trying to say, no, it's in Beit El, which is a little bit farther north of Jerusalem, which we've been to in... Look, here's Jerusalem.
Beto's basically due north.
Yeah.
20 minutes up the road from me.
Beitin, which is the Arabic name of it. There's a village here that's been associated. You know, most of our sites in the Bible,
they've identified often from the Arabic names that have been passed down. They were like transliterations of the ancient names. And so...
Is that where Aram came when he came into the land?
It would be, it presumably would be, let me, that's, is that in Genesis 12? Let's see. I don't know, you have to look it up in a second, but he's leaving from Beersheba, and Aram is up here in the north, and so he's on his way, and so... Most people often think this is it, but as Inga pointed out, there is Jewish tradition that it's actually the Temple Mount, Mount Moriah, which is where, remember in Genesis 22, the Akedah with Isaac is in.
It makes sense actually, doesn't it? Because he's coming up from Beersheba, and if it is Bamakom, the place, then it's much more likely to be the Temple Mount than
so
basically a nothing place a bit further up.
Okay, so there is this Hebrew word makom is often translated place, and so let's look at some of why this tradition is valid. Let's look at Deuteronomy 12, verse 5. Anybody want to read it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But you shall seek the Lord at the place which the Lord your God will choose from all your tribes to establish his name there for his dwelling, and there you shall come.
So this phrase is used throughout Deuteronomy about the Lord is going to choose this place where you will go up and you will do your three pilgrimages, you'll worship. You don't go to another high place. You don't go anywhere else in the land, which was very common back then. You only go to Jerusalem. Deuteronomy wants to pound it over and over again to the people. And so you have it in verse 5. And it just keeps going throughout Deuteronomy. You can find many other examples of it in these chapters. Look at Exodus, just to make things a little more complicated. Look at Exodus 33, verse 21. Exodus 33, verse 21. Maybe not complicated, but more complex. The Lord said, "Behold, there's a place by me. Put yourself here on this rock." So, this idea that Makom, this is the story of Moses and God, right? And Sinai, and where God, he hides him in the cleft of the rock and he passes over him. And so, in Jewish tradition, Makom takes on almost to be another name for God. It's, what's the word when you say heaven and you say Shemayim for God? It's a,
Circumlocution.
Circumlocution.
Metonymy is more when we refer to it as like a hand, all hands on deck. That's metonymy.
No, but I mean, in Jewish tradition, you never call, you
call him the name,
you
Hashem.
You call him Hashem. You call him Kadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, there's a... What's it? Not circumlocution. There's another one.
Is it
replacement? No, it's not. It's a replacement. I can't...
Yeah, we keep thinking about it. We'll come up with it.
Yeah, sure.
But probably the ultimate example of Hamakom in the Bible... when referring to God in Jewish tradition, as far as Jewish interpretation, is where?
Jerusalem.
The only book in the Bible that doesn't have God's name, which is?
Esther.
Esther, right? In Esther chapter 4, in the middle of that chapter, let's see here. Esther 4:14. Don't imagine that because you are part of the king's household, you will be the one Jew who will escape. This is Mordecai talking to Esther, right? You've got to go to the king and help us. If you keep quiet at this time, liberation and protection for the Jews will appear from another source. And mi makom acher. And so this has been like one of the greatest, God's not mentioned in that entire book, but if there's any hint or allusion to God, it's here. Because that's the only place help can come from is God. So here's Makom, and here is Jacob. And so the whole question of what is Beit El? Beit El, like you said, means house of God. And according to the Bible, where's the house of God? Jerusalem. Right? That's Psalms and all of this. So these are kind of two main competing places for where is Beit El. Is Beit El more of a euphemism? Like you said, it's called Luz, Nadine pointed out. So there is some historical topography that's put with it. And we don't know about Jerusalem being called Luz. We know of it being called what? Shalem, and it's a Jebusite city, and all of that. So it's kind of, you still have to kind of push it to put it here, but still, they're not super far apart. And as we pointed out, Jacob's there, I think, to find God. It's not just an accident. It's on purpose. He's running, he's scared, and he needs God.
So are you saying he realizes he's in a cult of science?
The what?
In a special place, a cult of science, some kind of...
Sure. Compound, if you like. No,
he actually took one of the sacred stones.
Like in the Bible, when someone murders someone, where do they go? They go to a city of refuge. And what do? They grab it on the horns of an altar, right? In movies, when someone's done something wrong, where do they run to? Usually it's like a Catholic church somewhere, right? And Mary's off in the distance on the wall, and they're kind of got their head bowed. You go to these places, when you're in trouble. I have a friend who became a Christian who, he was high on marijuana, and he was out of his mind, and he went to a church. I mean, and he became a believer that day. He was just kind of driven there.
But I think that's important, that it's like the Lord pulls him into this place and the Lord meets with him. It's not, I mean, he was scared, but was he really looking for God in the fear?
What was his description of the place? Jacob, how did he describe it after it happened?
This is the...
Surely he's in this place, and I didn't know, and then...
I was going to say, there's none other than the house of God.
This is a terrible place, right? Norar, doesn't it say that?
Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place?
Yeah, so awesome. The English is awesome there. Oh. But what's the Hebrew say?
Norar, you say?
Verse 17, right?
Vayira
vayomar ma nora hamakom azeh. Again, if makom is an allusion to God, God is awesome, as Rich Mullins has it, but also it's terrible too. It's fearful. We've lost the whole idea of what awesome is. Anyways, it's become a California surf term, but it's much more trembling and fearful.
Look what's happened to most of the classes between the Palestinian and the idea. Throwing stones is in Beitin.
Most of in Beitin. So, anyways, how about, again, let's go to our Renaissance art. What is Jacob's ladder? What's the Hebrew word?
Sulam.
Sulam.
So where else do we have a Sulam in the Bible?
We don't.
There is no other place where this term appears in the Bible. Today in modern Hebrew, you know, Sulam's a ladder. But in the Bible, what is a Sulam? Or do we even know?
Well, here it's called a stairway.
Okay, so you have a translation, stairway. Any other translations?
No, it's in Arabic, Sulam.
Okay, which is?
In Arabic, which is ladder.
Okay, right, ladder. So it's just like modern Hebrew as well. Stairway, anything else?
Stairway is
Madrigot. Madrigot?
Stairway is Madrigot.
Yeah, right, yeah. But that's not in the Bible.
Or something about it.
Like what?
Yeah.
Is that what you
right.
call it?
Right.
A zinger? Okay, so where does Jacob and his family come from? It's not Jacob. Abraham and his family. They're from Iraq, right? Chaldea, Ur, all of that. And what are they known for in this area? The ziggurats, right? And what are ziggurats? Yeah, they're kind of like pyramids. Let me see if... there we go. So you get something like this. It's multiple stairways, but what's the whole point of a ziggurat?
It's a staircase.
It's a staircase. It's like a temple type of thing, right?
Yeah. And they would put food and stuff on the top, I think, right? On the very top floor.
Yeah.
Food and drink.
It's an altar out there.
This is the part where I don't have my ancient Near East background, but yeah, anyone who's studied in this area, you're welcome.
I think they would put food and drink on the top, and the idea of what? That's why.
But it's very clear in the story of the building of the Tower above,
yes.
Which is the same ziggurat, that they're making a stairway to reach God. We're going to reach God our way.
Okay, so Jim had brought up the Tower of Babel. It's Migdal Babel, which again, Babel is in Iraq. It's in this area where we have ziggurats. And so probably what we're dealing with here is, again, it's a similar thing. In fact, the Bible even has very similar description for both of them. If you look in Genesis 11, verse 4, there's a song, Stairway to Heaven, Led Zeppelin. Yeah, Yeah, I was wondering if they've got an ancient Near East background too. So Genesis 11:4, come, let's build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Down to verse 5, but the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the people had started building. Verse 7, the Lord is saying, come, let's go down and let's confuse our languages. Okay, back in Genesis 28, describing the Sulam, what's it say there?
Well, it says basically the Lord is coming down, or the angels are coming down. But it does not say that he, so to speak, built the ladder so that he could go up.
And oh, yeah, sure, up. Sure. Yeah. But the idea is the same.
Exactly.
The idea is it's this connection, this bridge between
right.
God and man,
right.
right? On one hand, it's men trying to do it. On the other hand, it's God
doing it
my way. And but they both say their top, the top of the tower, the top of the Sulam is in heaven. It says there's this idea of a bridge going up and down. And who in Jacob's dream are going up and down?
Angels.
And everyone knows that angels in the Hebrew, their original meaning are messengers. Like if King David wanted to send a message to someone, he'd send off a messenger. And
so the difference with the Tower of Babel was that people would go up, right?
Yeah. Yep. So here's what I want to kind of come to now with our punch. Going back to, we started with Hosea 12, and we read those first two verses. And remember we read two verses. The first verse was talking about who in Hosea?
Jacob, or Israel, as it says. And then the second verse was talking about who?
Moses.
And I want to bring this connection together here to finish up. Jacob is an interesting person for many reasons. We already know he's a scoundrel, but besides that, God uses him in kind of amazing ways. First off, he has a dream here. And we know that other people have dreams, but what do dreams mean in the Bible? Like, if you receive a dream, what does that signify?
God's speaking to you.
Okay, God's speaking to you. Look at Numbers 12, verse 6. Numbers 12, verse 6. And he said, the Lord said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known to him in a vision. I will speak to him in a dream." So what is that person called who receives dreams? Prophet, right? A Navi. Remember in Hosea 12, verse 13, how is Moses described as a prophet, Navi, which we know comes from Deuteronomy, right?
And he spoke to Moses face to face.
Right, right. But, just...
Abraham, does he speak to Abraham face to face?
To Abraham? Well, I mean, it depends how you look at the stories. It doesn't say face to face like it does in Moses' story, but he's got these visitors that basically are God and his messengers, angels, so it would seem that you could read it as face to face.
It's clear. When there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He's faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly, and not in riddles.
Sure.
Which I think is tumunah in the Hebrew. He sees the form of the Lord. Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it, what Moses?
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm going back to Jacob. And Jacob has not just this dream, he has a few dreams. Do you remember? He sees things or he hears things. And on top of that, he has this interesting relationship with angels. At least that's what we call them. We call them angels. Sometimes they're anonymous people. For instance, in chapter 31, verse 11, Genesis 31, verse 11, Jacob says, when he's with his father-in-law, he says, "In the dream, the angel of God said to me, 'Jacob, here I am,' I replied." And then he said, he told him how to make the sheep to reproduce. Right? So this is a connection to an angel here speaking to him in a dream.
Can you just give us a reference?
Genesis 31, verse 11. Yeah, I am the God of Betel. So there again, we got Betel, but we don't have time to go into that. Genesis 32, verse 1. Genesis 32, verse 1. Another story here. It says, Jacob went on his way. And it says, the angels of God met him, or they bumped into him. And then what's Jacob say? This is the camp of God. So again, it's interesting. Jacob is like bumping into angels. He's not necessarily going out of his way. It's just kind of happening. Genesis 48, verse 16. This is Jacob. He's getting ready to die. not necessarily die right here, but he's getting older and he's doing blessings and on the sons of Joseph. And Genesis 48:16, he says, oh, by the way, the angel who has protected me from all harm, bless these boys. May my name be in them in the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. So again, there's this mention of angels connected to Jacob. That's Genesis 48, verse 16. And there's some other examples too connected to him, like seeing things. I think it's when the famine is coming, and it says he sees. He sees things. But anyways, here's where I want to get to the point here, is Jacob has dreams, he has supernatural experiences with God, with angels, but he's never called a prophet, as far as I can find. The word Navi is never connected to him. But based off of what the Bible describes as a prophet, he's definitely a prophet. And when we come to, let's go back to our Hosea 12 again. Hosea 12, we'll end with that, those two verses. For those who came in late, we started off the Bible study this morning by reading these two verses, the Haftarah. It says, Jacob fled to the country of Aram. Then Israel worked to acquire a wife. And again, how did Jacob's name become Israel?
When he meets with God.
After the angel.
After the angel.
Right. And by the way, that's in chapter 31, something like that, right? Does it say he wrestled with an angel? Does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't say angel. It just says a man, Ish. Now, the interpretation of an angel obviously comes in, even in the Bible, I think, in the Old Testament. But the point is again, there's another celestial being connected to Jacob.
The first time Israel appears
is right there. Yeah, exactly. And so again, even the name Israel has angels connected to it. And so anyways, back to this Hosea 12:13. He served for a woman, and for a woman he guarded or protected or tended sheep, as a lot of translations have there. And then it says, and with a prophet, the Lord brought up Israel from Egypt, and with a prophet, they were guarded or protected or preserved alive, or however you want to translate that. And so we start off by pointing out that the first verse obviously is talking about Israel or Jacob. The second verse is obviously talking about Moses. And what are the similarities between Jacob and Moses? You can just go ahead and start with the basic ones that are obvious.
Shepherds.
They're both shepherds.
They both brought people from a foreign land back to this land.
So they both come into the land. Yeah, yeah, they bring with their people. Yeah.
Yeah. They both had to flee.
They both hear God in different ways.
They both experience God.
Experience of God. They both have supernatural. I don't think Moses has many angels, does he? He doesn't have to, because if God speaks to him face to face, we start with the burning bush, and after that it's face to face, I guess.
But it's true, though, Moses and Jacob both have that initial experience. Moses with the burning bush, Jacob with the sulam. Yeah. That's how they get started.
Yeah.
It's a sign. What's another big one that connects them? They both serve their father-in-laws, right? Jacob's case, it's like 20 years. Moses, it's how many years? 40 years. And so going into this whole supernatural, prophetic connection that I see between the two of them, where are the two sections in the Old Testament that prophesy over the 12 tribes of Israel? Who are they?
Jacob
and Moses, right? Jacob is Genesis 49, and Moses is at the end of Deuteronomy, where they both take the 12 tribes and lay off words of prophecy, and often is connected to the end times, or the latter days, as it's given. So that's what I have to offer this morning with this Parashah and the Haftarah. And I think, I definitely think there's a strong link here with Jacob and Moses and Israel.
That's great.
So Shabbat Shalom.
Pointed out from Hosea 12,
that's right.